good right now. I mean, the stuff is really good. He's getting it to areas he wants to. You know, you got to respect the fastball, but the secondary stuff's really playing as well, and he's throwing the ball really well against us. And, you know, that got the better of us tonight.
He certainly did. That was Yankees manager Aaron Boone. Effusive in his praise, as indeed most of the Yankees were last night after their 5-4 loss to Yusei Kikuchi and the Blue Jays. Hello and welcome to Blair and Barker. It is a pregame show edition. 3:07 first pitch this afternoon. Kevin Gausman and Marcus Stroman, the Jays, looking for a potential sweep of the New York Yankees. They've already recorded their first series win against the Yankees at the Rogers Center since 2019 as a result of last night's 5-4 win. Lots to talk about out of that game, lots to look ahead to. In this game, Dan O'Dowd will join us at the bottom of the hour, and as I said, we'll get you set for first pitch. A reminder that Blair and Barker will be doing Blue Jays talk following the game tonight as well on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Yusei Kikuchi and his dominance of the New York Yankees, Kevin Barker. We talked about this yesterday and sort of came to the conclusion that even Yusei doesn't know why he dominates the Yankees.
Nope.
Again last night, you know, couple of heavy pitch innings, but something you always talk about with Yusei Kikuchi, the importance of efficiency. And he managed to kind of drag himself back into the game with an 11-pitch inning and an 8-pitch inning back-to-back.
Yep.
He was really good again last night, wasn't he?
Yeah, I think it's after the bad innings, right? It was the second inning where he threw 26 pitches. He gave up a run. The next inning, he threw 11 pitches.
Yeah.
After the fifth inning where he threw 20 pitches, he threw 12 pitches, sort of getting him back into the groove, right? Sort of, you know, not thinking so much about how many pitches he had to throw the inning before coming out and attacking. And, you know, that's the best glove side command and velocity on his fastball that I've ever seen him have. I mean, I can't say that any better than – you know what I just said. It when you see him doing that and getting called strikes to righties on such a small target, you know, Danny Jansen's getting in there. He's got a pretty wide base. He's a pretty big dude, but that's a really small target, right? The room for error in there is not very big, right? If you miss and you don't finish it and miss middle, which is where a lot of pitchers miss because, you know, just mechanically sound they're not all the time, and you're, you know, not driving that where you want it to end up, sometimes you leave it down the middle, or you choke it off too much because you're trying to be fine with it. You hit a guy, you're non-competitive with those pitches, you fall behind, you throw more pitches to a batter, you throw more pitches in an inning, you don't go as deep in a game as you want to go. I just think that command glove side, getting those called strikes, doing it with 97 consistently, and then starting to tunnel the slider, that's 90, 89, 90 miles an hour, having the late break on that, misses with the slider have been on point. I mean, it's almost been perfect, right, where he's just not throwing those cement mixers, not leaving those down the middle. And then he can change the speeds with that slow breaking ball. He steals a strike with it. He backdoors it to a righty. You know, he can get a weak contact from it. So, and then, by the way, I think he just sort of expects now to be really good. Mm-hmm. He's not hoping to be good. He expects to be good. And that's three quarters of the battle. So, yeah, I think I'm with everybody that talks about Yusei, and I got to be honest with you, if I'm Yusei's agent,
oh boy,
I don't know if I'm calling the Blue Jays or not, but I'm letting it be known that, hey, it's going to cost you. Like, he's turned the corner. Like,
he is a free agent at the end of the year.
This is why you gave him 3 years to look like this. That might have been a year or two late, but he's here. So, and if you want him, it's going to cost you. And this is good, right? This is, you know, he's competing to get paid a little bit more money. That only bodes well if you're a Blue Jays fan. It's good stuff. Like, he's fired up. He's a good defender. You know, we saw him covering first base last night. He's, you know, he just knows where to be and when to be there. Like, that's – and most pitchers are not like that. Like, let's be honest. They're worst athletes on the field, most of them. So, it's good to see him be able to do all those things.
Well, defense very much a part of the story last night for the Blue Jays. You talked about Yusei Kikuchi's play at first base on that deflected ball off the glove of Vladdy Jr., yeah. IKF covering up. But Kikuchi not stopping, seeing the ball deflect off.
Got to get big, too. Give him a big target slow down, shuffle your feet, find the bag, catch the ball. Yeah.
He got the first base. Yep. He saw a couple of great plays in the outfield. But let's face it, the key to beating the Yankees for the Jays is keeping Aaron Judge out of the game. Aaron Judge, 0 for 8 through two games, with four strikeouts. Now, in 112 career games against Toronto, he's hit .287. He's got 35 home runs.
Oof.
That's the most by a Yankee against Toronto in franchise history. He's hit seven home runs in his last 14 games against the Jays.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes, you know, you can hear your teammate, the opposing manager, talk about how good you are. You can hear Blair and Barker talk about how good you are. John Schneider talk about how good you are. But I thought it would be interesting to get Aaron Judge's take on Yusei Kikuchi and also Aaron Judge's start to the year. Again, small sample size, just 66 at-bats. But he's hitting .182. He's got nine ribbies. He scored seven runs. He's got three home runs. I think all of us expected a little more out of Aaron Judge this year, with Juan Soto hitting in front of him. This was Aaron Judge last night, his post-game interview. It's about 2.5 minutes, but it's worth listening to. Bear with me. It's Aaron Judge. Thanks to our friends at the Yes Network for providing us with the audio and the video.
Kikuchi has been really tough on you over the years. Just overall, what is it about his stuff that makes him difficult to figure out at the plate?
He's a great left-handed pitcher. You know, he's got a great fastball. He can run up there to mid-upper 90s. You know, good feel for his little cutter, slider combo, and a changeup splitter that he kind of mixes in there too. So it's just kind of keeps you off balance. You know, he runs it up there, and he's working the edges like he was tonight with all his pitches. Man, it makes it for a tough evening.
Aaron Boone was asked about your at-bats lately here to start this season, and he said he feels like maybe you're not dominating the fastball like you typically do when you're really locked in. How would you describe how you're feeling at the plate right now?
Just like every year, you know, still trying to improve, still trying to work. Just when I'm getting my pitch, just missing it, you know. But we got to keep throwing out good at-bats, take my walks when I can if I don't get anything, and you know, just keep staying aggressive. You know, that's the only way to, you know, get out there and put some hits, especially with our lineup, is, you know, you got to keep swinging.
You previously said that your layoff in spring training might be contributing to the slow start. Do you feel like that's having an impact?
No.
If it's not that, then what do you think it is?
It's baseball. You know, you go through ups and downs like this throughout the year. Obviously, you don't want to start out like that. You know, but we keep throwing out wins. You know, we didn't win tonight, but, you know, all we can do is show up tomorrow and keep working and, you know, end the series with a win.
What'd you think of the way Carlos battled through tonight?
Yeah, he battled all night. And that's where, you know, these are the ones that kill you as a hitter, is that you want to give the guy a couple more runs, and, you know, we got a good outing out of him, you know, especially against this lineup. You know, they battled, got him to 3-2 counts quite a bit. But, you know, we just weren't able to scratch any runs. You know, we got that one early. But, you know, that's where as a team you gotta capitalize, and when you get the lead, you gotta keep extending it. So we didn't do that tonight, and we gotta show up tomorrow. Another tough outing.
Passing last night was tough. Kikuchi tonight. Is there something that these guys do game playing wise against you, or is it just two tough pitchers?
No, they're two great pitchers. You know, that's where you gotta just strap in and compete. You know, and that's what we're doing even tonight, all the way to the very end. You know, we're competing. You know, you get their closer back. Romano's another great pitcher, and you know, we're able to get one run against them, and you know, almost tied up there late in the game. But they got a great pitching staff over there. But you know, as an offense, we got to keep working, keep doing what we're doing, keep passing baton, and you know, we'll be fine.
So, Kevin, I wanted to play that whole clip because, again, Aaron Judge is, you know, now, of course, he'll probably go 4-for-4 with four home runs today or something like that against Kevin Gausman. But Aaron Judge is obviously scuffling. But I just thought it was interesting hearing him talk about Kikuchi in particular and about, again, it's nothing earth-shattering, but you can tell when a guy is answering a question that he has put some thought into why the guy has become good. You know, he's not just saying, well, he's a great pitcher, he's not blah, blah. I'm going to ask you about Aaron Judge, though, because, look, again, he's on that list of Blue Jays killers. I mean, I just gave you the numbers. Mm-hmm. We know he loves playing at the Rogers Center, but this is probably the two least effective back-to-back games I've seen him have against the Jays.
Yeah, he's not the only guy. Volpe, Soto, Judge, Rizzo combined in the first two games, 2-for-31, 11 strikeouts. He's not the only guy, right? Sometimes I think, just like Judge there was having a tough time tipping his hat to a couple of pitchers, occasionally you're going to run into a couple guys that just are dominating, locating with velocity, can add and subtract on secondary stuff, got you out front. You know, when you're trying to guess along, they're sort of combating that with the exact right pitch and the exact right location. I just think they ran into a couple guys who have been locating with velocity and, you know, have confidence in that when they throw a secondary pitch, that their misses are going to be really good. And if you don't make an adjustment or you're not fully healthy, you know, I was at the field today before I came on the show here, I was asking around, you know, why you think the slow start is. And some people were saying that, you know, cover the Yankees a lot or saying maybe he's still recovering from the toe issue, That is his left foot. That is where he's rotating. He's a giant human. Like just, you know, thinking about if you're him, can you let it eat and be okay because you want to be on the field all year. I mean, sometimes that mental hurdle of just getting past that, early in the season at least, like you got to sometimes get through that. So I'm sure, you know, it's a combination of a bunch of things, but you still got to make good pitches against him. You got to set him up the right way. I mean, he does have holes because he is a big dude. Like it is, you know, it takes a lot for him to get it in the zone, keep it in the zone, stay through the zone to be able to have the ball end up where he wants it to end up. So, yeah, look, I talked to Kevin too today, Kevin Gausman, right? It's not no easy feat. And I, you know, as they were getting some laughter of, you know, you see the stats since April the 8th, the Blue Jays lead baseball with their starters of ERA of 2.15. Yeah. They're 6-2 at the homestand. That's basically the homestand, right?
Yes.
And the word is right around there is don't screw it up. Go out and let's see your best stuff. And I had the conversation with the pitching coach and, you know, a brief, quick conversation with Kevin. And they're looking, they seem to think that the 94-95 is consistently back. He should locate that, right? That's where everything starts. Even the greatest hitters ever, and I've said this, when we talk about Vladdy and whoever else, and it's the same way with a pitcher. Command the fastball, hit the fastball. You're a hitter, you're hitting it. When you're a pitcher, you're throwing it. You want it to end up where you want it to end up because of the velocity that you want to throw it to that spot. Coming into today, Kevin Gausman, batters are hitting a 409 off his fastball. That's just not good enough. Like that is where it starts, right? So if you're a fan of the Blue Jays, you're watching the game today, look for that, right? The 94-95 pitching with that, you know, in's going to be a big deal. You can see if you're watching, if you're Kevin and you're, you know, wondering where you need to pitch these sort of guys, right? It's away to the lefties. It's into the righties. It's elevating with two strikes. It's tunneling the split finger off that, right? Kevin talks about this all the time. If he can go down and away and down and in with the split finger, he's either getting a swing and miss or a ground ball. That's weak contact, and obviously you can't put a ball in play. So velocity, location on the fastball, and that sort of two different planes of the split finger. And occasionally seeing the slider about once every 10 pitches. I think that's where it's at. Don't abuse it. You know, when he's really good, it's 10%. Yeah. It ain't 14% of the time, right? So if you're seeing a bunch of sliders, that means the fastball's not where it should be and the split finger's not real good. So I expect this is sort of his season starts today. You know, there is some of those games where you just don't want to screw it up. Everybody else is doing their thing. And it's sort of, you know, starting to see the way the rotation is and what we thought it should be. And you don't want to be that odd guy. You don't want to be the guy that sort of screws it up and disrupts all of that. So I'm sure we're going to see the best out of Kevin today.
We saw the Jays win the first two games of this series against a starting pitcher, Luis Gil, who was effectively wild. We saw Carlos Rodon last night. You heard Aaron Judge talk about that. I mean, The Jays worked him into a number of 3-2 counts. The Jays are seeing one of the things that is obvious about the Jays this year. We've talked about how this offense it's not a grip it and rip it offense anymore. They're going to be cobbling runs together and grinding out innings, but they're also seeing a lot of pitches.
Think that's by choice, though.
No, but my point is they are seeing a lot of pitches.
They are. Yeah.
It is driving up the pitcher's pitch count. So Luis Gil, effectively wild. Carlos Rodon,
A
hard thrower.
Yeah.
Marcus Stroman this afternoon against the Blue Jays. Now, Marcus Stroman is you know, it's what? It's his second start? It's his third start against him. Second start at the Rogers Center.
Second start this year. First start, he went six innings, didn't give up a run, three hits, a walk, six Ks. Right. He's really good.
Right.
Yep.
And he's also pitching a little differently. Where am I? I was just looking at this a minute ago with Marcus Stroman here. Just the pitch breakdown. He's changed his pitching a little bit. What do you expect?
He's a sinkerball guy, right? I mean, if you're hitting off sinkerball guys who can backdoor things, who can throw them in, you know, which would make it real hard to get on the bottom part of that baseball, right? Most sinkerball guys, you're thinking, I want to hit the bottom part of the ball, not the top part of the ball or the center part of the ball. That why you want to be on time. You want to be short and quick. You want to catch it out front, because if you catch it when it's in its break, that's a ground ball. You're going to be out and around. You're going to be off balance. You're going to have some quick innings. I think you got to be real patient against him. If you fall behind in the count, you fall behind in the count, right? I mean, he's striking out some guys this year because he's all over the strike zone. He gets them in swing mode.
He's throwing a slider. He's throwing the slider a lot more than he has in the past, too. And it's been a good pitch for him.
Yeah, well, he's throwing his slider harder. He's throwing his cutter slower. He's throwing his slider harder, which will tell you he's trying to probably tunnel that slider off the sinker, sequence that pitch, make it look the same, get a swing and miss off it. Right, he's trying to tunnel it, make it look as the same as fastball. He's throwing his cutter slower. So basically, sort of in fastball counts, to take the sting out of the bat, he throws a slower fastball with some late movement with the cutter that's all over the outer edges of the strike zone. Right, he's a tough take. That's basically what that is. The accuracy of the barrel is a big deal for a hitter, right? You want to be real accurate with throwing the barrel at the baseball. What do sinkerball guys do? They get it off the barrel. It's off the end. You jam yourself. You can't overthink these dudes. You just really can't. The only advice I think you can give 1 through 9, be patient. Don't be overly aggressive against this guy. He will throw you one down the middle. You have to let him. If you don't, he will give you 6 innings, no runs, 3 hits, a walk, and 6 punch-outs, and he will be doing the shimmy shake at about 3:45 at the Rogers Center.
3:07.
Is that how you do the shimmy shake? He'll be doing that.
3:07 will be the first pitch this afternoon at the Rogers Center as Kevin Gausman takes on Marcus Stroman. The Jays looking for a sweep of this 3-game series. The Jays lineup for the game is as follows. Springer, Guerrero, Bichette, Turner, Biggio starting at third base. I believe that's his first start at third base this year. Schneider at second. Varsho in left, Kirk behind the plate, Kiermaier in center. Danny Jansen made his first start of the year last night after returning to the Blue Jays. So it's probably no surprise, day game after night game, that Kirky's getting the start. But I want to talk about Jordan Romano and Eric Swanson. Both of them activated yesterday, Kevin. We saw Jordan Romano last night in the ninth inning. The discussion leading up to Jordan Romano's return was how exactly would John Schneider handle the back end of the bullpen, you know, late in games. Last night we saw Jimmy Garcia used in the eighth inning against the big three, if you want to call them that, of the Yankees.
They are the big three.
The big three. We saw Jimmy Garcia get the eighth inning last night. Then we saw Jordan Romano come in the ninth and got the save. It was a little wobbly, but by the end, his velocity seemed to have increased from the first pitch to the to the last pitch of the game. Got a great defensive play by Dalton Varsho. It's amazing, isn't it, when you make a defensive substitution and you move Varsho from center to left and Kiermaier to center.
John had a really good game yesterday.
Yep. He had a really good game yesterday, and I thought showing a lot of patience as well with Kikuchi when you saw Kikuchi doing the stretching and. Remember, he was off the mound, and there, you know, my first thought was probably the same as you and Buck. I'm going, is this an oblique injury? I hope not. Obviously, it wasn't because he finished the game. But is this how John Schneider is going to use the bullpen? Is Jimmy Garcia going to get the meat of whatever order they're facing?
Yeah,
even if it doesn't come in the ninth?
You can't argue that Jimmy Garcia is the best bullpen arm they have right now.
No, without question.
It worked out yesterday that 2, 3, 4 in the order came up in the eighth inning.
Right.
And not the ninth inning. It will be intriguing to see if both of those guys are healthy and available, and 2-3-4 is coming up in the ninth inning and not the eighth inning.
Although,
hey, does he flip-flop them?
If I'm not mistaken, John did say he would not use Romano back-to-back out of the gate.
I'm sure that makes total sense, right? You don't want to abuse it. You know, he's trying to still get his feet wet. You want the best out of Jordan Romano all season. You don't want to lose him as soon as you get him back. But I'm saying if both are available.
Oh, yeah.
2-3-4 is coming up in the ninth inning. When do you use him? Like, who do you use? Just so happens yesterday it worked out to where I got my ninth inning guy, 5-6-7 is coming up. I'm okay throwing him against 5-6-7 because 2-3-4 was, you know, with Jimmy Garcia, and Jimmy's my best pitcher. It's just, John is very good at communicating. Like, you know, some people will say he's not. He is very good at the communication thing, and Pete Walker, for me, is the best in baseball at it. I know I cover Pete Walker all the time, but he is the best at communicating around. I just wonder how that conversation will go.
I also wonder if you're Jimmy Garcia, do you go to the Jays and say, you know what, if I'm going to be closing out games, I'd like some trumpets and some lights. I mean, I want the exploding stadium show that Jordan Romano's getting right now.
Jimmy wants to sneak up on him. Like, Jimmy's he's a very quiet man. Like, he just wants to go out and do his business, get the ball whenever John hands him the ball, go out and try and get the job done. Earn some money for his family. He's sort of not that kind of person.
No, but Jordan Romano may be the only setup. It may turn into the only setup guy in the majors with a light show.
I'm not saying he's the setup guy.
I'm just saying, early in the season,
with what Jimmy is doing, and Jimmy is their best bullpen arm, and you want him in the biggest parts of the game, do you flip-flop him? Because that will hurt feelings. Got to be good at that, controlling feelings and maneuvering around, you know, trying to make sure nobody's crying
and
hating you in the clubhouse behind your back.
And you
got to
remember, those two dudes, want to get paid. Jimmy's free agent. Jordan Romano's a year. I think he's a free agent at the same time as Bowen and Vladdy. Whatever, they want to get paid.
Yeah, I don't think this is a year-long thing, but right now Jimmy's the best at it, right? You want Jimmy in the biggest parts of the game. Again, it just worked out yesterday to where 2-3-4 was coming up in the eighth inning. Well, what if it's coming up in the ninth inning?
Would
Jimmy have still thrown the eighth inning? Why would you waste him 8-9-1? You wouldn't. That'd be dumb. That's how you lose games.
I almost think what you would do is you would go with somebody else in that situation, and then in the ninth, decide where you are, and then make the call.
There's that ego thing.
Sure.
Egos and feelings again, right? I'm the ninth inning guy. How dare you? Like, how do you control that? The bottom line is Jimmy's better than you right now. Like, I want him against their best hitters. How do you control that? How do you manage that? Again, it just worked out that way where he didn't have to do any communicating.
Yeah.
But there's going to be a time here soon where that comes about. How do you handle that?
Yeah,
this is an intriguing part of it. I'm sure they're both grown-ups. They'll figure it out. And, again, Pete Walker's really good at that, sort of saying, well, you know what the answer is. I don't need to tell you. But sometimes they need to hear it. So that's just intriguing.
Dan O'Dowd is a former MLB general manager. He's one of our favorites. He's a terrific analyst on MLB Network. He is going to join us as we get you set for the third game of this three-game series against the Yankees. The end of a 9-game road trip or homestand. Jays could finish this homestand 7-2 with a win today.
For me, that should be.
7-2, pretty good homestand.
Absolutely.
Pretty good homestand. Dan O'Dowd's next. It's Blair and Barker, the pregame show edition on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and Sportsnet.
Diving deep into Leafs, Raptors, Jays, and NFL. The J.D. Bunkus Podcast. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Springer, Guerrero, Bichette, Turner, Biggio at third base, Schneider at second, Varsho in left, Kirk behind the plate. Kevin Kiermaier in center field, Kevin Gausman on the mound. That is your Blue Jays lineup for this afternoon's game, 3:07 first pitch against the New York Yankees at the Rogers Center. The Jays have tomorrow off. Then they're in San Diego. Then they're in Kansas City to take on one of the surprise teams this year in Major League Baseball, the Kansas City Royals. But before that, they've got to deal with Marcus Stroman and the Yankees. Sweeping the Yankees, first of all, all you need to know is that yesterday's 5-4 win gave the Jays their first home series win against the Yankees since pre-COVID. mean, that's the only way to look at it. Sweeping the Yankees would be something else. Five in a row if they sweep the Yankees.
It's a good call, Jeff. Boy, you're good.
That's why they pay me.
What? You're on top of that.
The medium bucks. You cannot beat that. Sweeping the Yankees is always a good thing. Let's bring in Dan O'Dowd. He's a former Major League Baseball general manager and now MLB Network analyst, one of our favorites. Dan, thanks so much for joining us today. You know we appreciate your time, and I don't want to waste any time, so I will get to it. You know, last year, Don Mattingly made a comment to reporters in Toronto that I think we kind of glossed over. And essentially what he said is, you know, look, the days of three or four guys hitting 30 or 40 home runs, that this team's not built like that. You know, we're built to grind out wins. Flash forward to this year, everybody's concerned about the lack of power the Blue Jays have. But Don Mattingly again says, hey, you know, he says, look, we have five guys who can hit 20 home runs. That's possible. But we are a team that is going to have to grind out wins, grind out at bats. As a GM, Dan, how hard is it to take an organization that lived and died one way, and in the case of the Blue Jays, power, and turn it into an organization that's living and dying with pitching and defense?
Well, it's not easy. First of all, guys, thanks for having me on. I always love coming on with you guys. I mean, creating identities is difficult under any conditions. You know, completely changing identities is exceptionally challenging. But there is absolutely no doubt that as you look at the Blue Jays, the way they're constructed right now, I mean, its starting rotation has a chance to be exceptional. They've got to get Gausman turned around, but I think that's just a result of not having a very abbreviated spring training and getting their bullpen guys healthy. You know, but so far, hey, it's only 10% of the season. So far, it looks like scoring runs could be a tad of a challenge for them this year. So, I mean, every team that wins in our games, guys, they do a couple things really, really well. And if you don't do things really well, you simply don't win in our game. And I think the Blue Jays offensively are still trying to figure out what that identity actually is.
Dan, I just came from the field, and I talked to Bo Bichette for, I don't know, about 20 minutes about hitting. And the first question I ask him when I walk up to him is, how are you feeling mechanically? Because, you know, it's kick it to the ear. It's trying to get it down. It's, you know, start, lead with the back elbow, get the barrel in the hitting zone way back there. You know, it's sort of the 2024 way of hitting. He said, I got to be honest with you, Bark, it's the best mechanically I've ever felt. Like, everything is flowing the way it's supposed to be feeling. And I'm like, well, why aren't you hitting? And he said to me, you know, sometimes that in certain counts that earlier in my career, including last year, that I would take that single to right field. Now I'm trying to backspin that to the pull side. I'm actually making a conscious effort to do that. And I just wonder, Dan, is that sort of what great players, you've been around great players before that know how to hit and they're sort of trying to evolve themselves into whatever they're going to evolve into. Is that sort of the process? Should we be patient with, you know, hitters like Bo that are going to go through things because they're trying to learn how to do everything? Lead American League in hits, hit 330, and also hit 30 homers.
Yeah, no, honestly. I mean, he's had 70 plate appearances. So, I mean, you know, I mean, I never really even looked at somebody until they got 150 underneath their belt. Mm-hmm. But no, that's not the thought process. I've seen a lot of great hitters from my days in Cleveland and in Colorado, even my early days in Baltimore. I think power is an evolving thing. I think Bo just needs to keep doing what he's doing exceptionally well. I mean, this is a kid for me that I actually, in my predictions, which, you know, are always wrong, but I had him winning the American League batting title because I just saw this incredible ability to, one, recognize balls and strikes, but even expand the strike zone and somehow find the barrel of the bat consistently. And I think mechanically he was set up to, you know, very similar to what the greatest hitters in the game do. So when I just heard that from you, that would concern me.
Yeah.
Because now he's trying to force something to happen that just, I think, would happen in just time. He's 26 years old. So, like, I don't know if there's 30. I think there's 30 home runs in there. But, you know, doesn't happen until he's 30, like, I'm really good with that. Mm-hmm. As long as he continues, you know, taking the gifts and blessings that he has and maximizing it. So, you know, that would concern me. So now I ask that question, what is causing that? And the thing about when I watch Bo play, the thing that does concern me is his contractual situation. You know, it's just sometimes when a player gets into this stage of their career and they're not signed long term and they look at what gets paid in the game, do they chase some things that, you know, that they know will pay in the game versus just being the great hitter or great player that they are and let that all evolve on its own? And I've gone through that with players too. And when I watch Bo play, I think that's kind of a conundrum that he's in right now from a personal standpoint, as he's really matriculated now in that Blue Jay organization. He begins to think, am I going to be here long term? Do I only have a few more years left? And I think that does weigh on players more than what any of us seem to think.
Yeah, I think you nailed that.
No,
absolutely.
This is God's honest truth. My next question was going to be about Bo and Vladdy in particular. Look, they're free agent eligible at the end of next year. It doesn't seem, I mean, who knows what's going on behind closed doors, but certainly there haven't been any leaks, Dan, to suggest that at either point the organization and either of these players have come close to the type of contract that buys out a couple of years of free agency. I mean, I'll just ask you, you've been a general manager. You can't let these two guys walk as free agents, I don't think, can you? And if you're the Blue Jays, how do you manage this now? Because you're, you know, I keep telling people, I think the train left the station about a year and a half or 2 years ago. Now but I'm still holding on to some sort of optimistic feeling, but how do you handle this now?
I think the Blue Jays are a large enough, financial organization to compete for players on the free agent market. But it's tough. You know, it really is hard. You know, I was a big believer in signing my core players at an early age, the long-term contracts, like, you know, what the Orioles just did with Bobby Witt. Sometimes financially it doesn't make sense, and you're betting on a lot of things that may not happen. It's just I never wanted those things to become a distraction. And I think it really becomes a distraction when you expect some of those young players now to become leaders on your team, and yet you don't commit to them. So it's hard for them to lead when they don't feel like they're going to be there long term. It's amazing the things that run through players' minds. Now, a lot of it's not even true, but in their mind, you know, everything about the future, as we know as adults, is scary. That's why it's not good to go into the future, and that's why it's good to focus on the present. It's just easier said than done. So I would think if they haven't really addressed that, and I don't know any different than what you know, a lot of it could have been done, and it simply was too big of a gap between what the club thought was the right number and what the player and his representative thought was the right number. But I would think at this point in time, it becomes even more challenging to get him signed long term.
You know, I was thinking about this when watching the Orioles play and watching the Jackson Holliday make his debut, and thinking of where they are now with Adley Rutschman and Gunnar Henderson, and now there's Jackson Holliday, and they've got all these young guys that are contributing. And I'm wondering, Dan, is there an art to when you've got a group of young players coming up together? You know, and I look at Bo and Vladdy, they're not a group, but there's two of them. Is it hard to kind of make that commitment when you've got two guys in the picture, you know, or in the case of the Orioles, maybe four or five? Like, if I give Adley Rutschman this, do I have to give Gunnar Henderson this? And if I give him that, oh my God, what if just Jackson Holliday is really good? Like, how do you manage that as a GM? The idea that you've got good young players, they've all come up together, that's great and wonderful, but they all want to get paid within a year of each other.
Well, Mark went through that in Cleveland. He got there at the end of kind of our, you know, our Mad Max moments of signing players long-term. But I mean, that's a great problem to have, because that means you have a lot of talented players. And everybody's going to look at their situation differently. Comparable self-worth is always based upon a variety of different factors. And quite honestly, some players that you approach simply, you're not going to sign long-term because they truly don't want to play. They don't want to sign for that until they actually know what their market value actually is. And those are players you just have to make a decision about as relates to you're going to keep them or you're going to move them at some point in time. But no, I don't think it really is. I think if you've got really good, talented players, you certainly have a vision on which ones you want to sign long-term. But heck, the more you can sign them long-term, the better stability and continuity you're going to have, and the better roadmap you're going to have for a business standpoint. I mean, your fans know who's going to be there. Your season tickets are going to follow through. Your individual game sales, your merchandising, all the thing that drives your revenue base, you know, is going to be able to sustain itself for a pretty long period of time. I mean, I just never saw a lot of downside of doing that unless you simply just whiff on your evaluations. But, I mean, it's not brain surgery to look at Bobichet and Vladdy Guerrero or Gunnar Henderson or Adley Rutschman or Jackson Holliday or Colton Cowser now and say, man, he's going to be like really – these guys are aircraft carriers. And I don't think you commit to players – I think you can commit to players that aren't aircraft carriers. Guys are important to the culture of your organization. But I don't think it's that hard to commit to aircraft carriers. It's just a matter of whether you want to, you know, take up that larger percentage of your payroll that's going to go to a few different players.
Dan, how hard is it for an organization to determine on what a player ultimately is? Like, right, like Vladdy's an example. We talk about him all the time. This is an easy example, right? He had one real good year where he had 48 homers. He's had 2 years in a row where, you know, he's been a good hitter, not a great hitter. How, as a front office, do you determine that's who he is? Like, he's never going to be that 48 homer guy again. He's going to be that 24, 25 homer with 90 plus RBIs instead of being the 115 RBI guy. How do you do that? Like, I think that's sort of listening to you talk. I think that's the hardest thing to determine, right? Is with youth, how do you know?
I think it's not hard from the, honestly, I don't think it's hard from the club perspective to figure that out. I think it's harder for the player and his representative to come to grips with that.
Oh.
Well, I think that's where you get that, you know, that those breaches that, you know, you can't really, especially with, you know, in Vladdy's case, it's right-handing hitting first basemen, and the Mets are going through that now with Alonso. I mean, the market's been pretty well established with Paul Goldschmidt, even though his contract is a little bit, you know, dated now. But, you know, the Olsen kid down in Atlanta just signed a contract. He's a pretty incredible player. So, you know, the clubs look at those contracts as, well, this is industry standard. But obviously, you know, the player and the representative may feel like, well, I'm more worth Aaron Judge's money.
Yeah.
And so that, I think that's – it's. I don't think it's hard from a club perspective to realize what you have in a player. I think it's more difficult when the player feels like the way you look at him is not the way he looks at himself.
Yeah. You know, there are five teams right now that I think kind of have surprised us to varying degrees. You know, the Pirates, the Royals, we'll see the Royals next week, the Brewers, the Tigers, and, I mean, the Cleveland Guardians, who not just by virtue of their record, but the fact, Dan, that they're middle or slightly above middle of the pack in home runs, which, you know, is that was one of the issues with the Guardians. Which of those teams do you think is capable of sustaining this?
Oh, just 10% of the season. And so, you know, I'd hate to say none of them. But, you know, I do think you have to look at the divisions they play in. So, like, Kansas City and Cleveland, I think, realistically, with Minnesota's just, again, been beset by a bunch of injuries for players that just struggle to stay healthy. So that might be a division that wins, you can win that division with 84 wins, hypothetically. Mm-hmm. And so the better you play earlier in the year, you begin to establish this level of belief and confidence that, you know, we don't necessarily have to be one of the best teams in the league to win our division. We just have to be better than the other teams in our division to win the division. And I do think that allows you, and Kansas City starting pitching right now and Cleveland starting pitching right now, you know, they are, it looks like that might be some sustainability.
Mm-hmm.
Kansas City's bullpen is still, for me, a big issue because they have no one that strikes anybody out. So now you're a bullpen that has to rely on soft contact defense and keeping the ball in the yard. And that gets harder as you go deeper into the season. Cleveland's got a pretty dynamic bullpen. And so there's some separators with both of those clubs. The one thing that Kansas City has that Cleveland doesn't have is Bobby Witt Jr. And to me, he is playing right now as one of the best players in the game. And again, he's playing with this sense of freedom that I believe accompanied that contract. I don't think that contract created expectations. I think that contract created freedom for him and his teammates because now they know they're playing with one of the most dynamic young players who's going to be a superstar in this game for the next 10, maybe 12, 13 years. I think that's made the whole team better. And so it's amazing what confidence can do for you when you gain it early in the year. But Kansas City still lacks offense, and they still lack bullpen. Pittsburgh, I still feel like it's not that Jarrett Jones, with Skeens and Jarrett Jones become the anchor of their rotation. I think that's when that team has a chance to really, really be competitive in that division.
Dan, if you're running an organization with the way velocity and injuries are going sort of hand in hand with pitchers, would you be worried about that?
Well, first, I would totally change. I mean, I wouldn't. I'm not saying I have the answers. It's like having the Holy Grail.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
I definitely know the definition of insanity is continue to do the same thing you're doing, expect a different result. And so I think the team that zigs and zags a little quicker than everybody else is going to have a huge competitive advantage, because at some point in time, the league is going to put some rules in place that's going to force starting pitching to extend further. And so I'm probably going a little bit more old school in my approach and what I'm scouting for. I'm going to focus a little bit more on I think injuries don't happen because of velocity. I think injuries happen because of the way the velocity is utilized and how it's obtained through the training of it. And so, you know, not that I'm going to run a team again, but I certainly don't want to share everything that I feel. But I do feel like if teams begin to look at velocity as a weapon to be utilized in the context of an appropriate delivery, but not to be utilized all the time through the course of a ball game, and if the training to get the velocity is done appropriately, that doesn't run the risk. There's a direct correlation for me with the uprising in these facilities that create harder throwers and the increases in Tommy Johns. I mean, you'd be an idiot not to see the direct correlation between those two things.
Absolutely.
And so how you get velocity, how you train to get velocity, how do you utilize velocity, and then how you create players who can sustain it based upon what they do in between their starts and what they do in the offseason. I think the club that figures that out is going to have an incredibly competitive advantage in the game.
Absolutely.
Dan, really good as always for you to join us. Again, we really appreciate your time. Terrific insight as always. Thanks so much.
Yeah,
be well.
Wonderful. Thanks, Dan.
Thanks, guys. Have a great summer. I'm sure I'll catch you down the road.
Awesome. Absolutely. See you. Thank you.
Dan O'Dowd, MLB Network analyst. I'm a note taker. I took a page full of notes when Dan's talking. We had Dr. Andrews on, and I've since then, I've had a couple of exchanges with different people, and I'm amazed that organizations allow their pitchers. Anybody can do whatever they want to make money. That's fine, but I'm kind of amazed organizations allow their pitchers to go to some of these facilities in the off season and
cheaper. It's easy.
I just
cheaper for them to go there.
It's because I'm not a trust. I just wouldn't trust my pitcher. And I'm not even saying the person running the facility doesn't know what they're doing or anything. I think that's
proofs
that's
in the pudding.
Silly. There's evidence where guys have gone to those facilities and gotten better. My point is, though, I would be a little more skeptical than I think a lot of pitchers are. When they go to these things, I think I would be asking more questions. Like, I understand, you know, there's a lot of feedback in these. The pitchers don't show up and they're not greeted by a guy who says, okay, here's what you're going to do. Go down and do this and come back and see me in a week. Mm. I mean, that's not how it works. The pitchers are involved in it. They have a say in the program and all that stuff. But I just don't like doing things outside the confines of the team.
Yes, it's easy for me. This is a player trying to make as much money as quick as possible. There's more money in me doing this for 3 or 4 years instead of trying to make a bunch of money in 10 years. Like, why would I do that? If I blow out in three or four years and I've made tons of money and I can throw a bazillion miles an hour, give me the 3 or 4 years.
This is the thing. Shouldn't the team have the facility to do that? Like, you look at the stuff the Jays have. I mean, if I'm a Jays pitcher, why am I going to Bob and Ted's pitching workshop? Oh, what? Why am I not going to the Jays facility? Well, I mean, what? The Magic Kingdom at the Jays training complex isn't working? I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, I'm not sure they don't have that. I mean, I've never, you know, put it. And again, it's like Fort Knox in there. Like, they're not going to tell you every single thing they're trying to do to their pitchers. No, and I'm not sure they don't have that.
But my point is, I think it's to the point now where it's anything to get velocity. And yeah. I agree with you. It's the same thing in some ways with steroid use. If guys weren't able to make money as a result of what they did, they wouldn't have done it. Like, guys didn't decide to use anabolic steroids so they could hit the ball farther because it was cool to hit the ball farther. They did it because if I hit the ball farther and if I hit it more, I'm going to get more money.
Yeah, Dan nailed it. But if I'm a player, I don't care about the organization. I only care about how much money I can make as quickly as I can make it. And if I can do that going to a, you know, Ted and Dan's workshop that you know, makes me throw 7 miles an hour harder, yeah, and I can get dudes out for 3 years in a row doing it, and they'll give me a bazillion dollars for that, I'll take my 3 years and take my chances of getting hurt. And if I get hurt, I got a bazillion dollars.
Yeah.
Instead of me trying to do this over 10 years, there's just no money in it.
I mean, both sides
can make more money quicker. That's bottom line. That's why they're doing it.
One of the things Dan said that I really like, and one of the things I wrote down, he talked about Bobby Witt, how a contract can create freedom, not expectations.
Yeah, I'm going to say this. The conversation I had today with Bo, Vladdy was sitting right beside Bo when I was having the conversations, and I said, Bo, what are you seeing with Vladdy? And he looked right at me and said, he's doing the same thing I'm doing. He's chasing distance.
And what is that? And why are they doing that?
I mean, I'm not saying that Dan is exactly right about the contract and woe is me.
I think he is.
I mean, they're still making quite a bit of money.
Yeah.
But they know they can make tons of money, yep, by hitting the ball in the seats. And Bo ain't going to do that by trying to go the other way. Bo ain't got that much power. And neither does Vladdy. Maybe he does in Dunedin and Buffalo. But he ain't doing that in big league stadiums. And the way you're going to do that is up the middle to the pool side. And I got to be able to do that by taking Big Daddy hacks. Yeah.
And this gets to the point.
I mean,
this gets to the point you made in spring training about quote unquote, team-wide approach.
Yeah.
That's all fine and well until guys want to get paid. And then they're going to do what they're going to do.
Well, do damage on what you think you can do damage on. And I think that is sort of a individual team-wide approach. By not everybody likes velocity. Why would I look for it? I'm going to look breaking ball till I get to two strikes, and then I'm going to fight. Bo is not that guy. He can get quadruplets in any mile per hour. Vladdy is not that way. Vladdy don't like the ball in. Mm-hmm. Why would I swing at the ball in? No. I want the ball away from me, get my arms extended to where I can get the ball in the air. He just consistently, because of mechanics, eyes moving around and trying too hard because nobody else around him is doing things. You don't think he hears exactly what we're saying? They got 14 homers trying to go to the playoffs. They're pitching. They ain't hitting. They expect a couple of dudes in that order to always carry the team. And I know fans are going, woe is me. But it's a thing. And they're human beings. So I'm just intrigued to see how this works out. Because I just don't think Bo can have the season he wants to have. Having that mindset, that's going to be a mental challenge all year for him. Because he knows he can get paid by doing it a certain way. Like the next tier pay.
Yeah.
Not the $35 million pay, the next tier pay. And he's a human. He wants to get paid. Well, and he should be paid.
And
but you get paid by doing all of it. And Kevin, all of it means hitting the ball in the seats. So I'm intrigued.
And he's smart enough to know that he's playing a position right now where there's a lot of money. There's a lot of money in the game. Shortstops are making a ton of money.
Can he get paid by leading the American League in hits?
See, you know how I feel about him.
Are they going to pay him that? Would the Dodgers pay him that? Probably not. They probably would not pay him for that.
They would
pay him if he's doing all of it, though.
This wouldn't have been an issue if the Jays had, anyhow, don't get me going.
And again, he's hitting third. I've said this to you. It's different hitting second than third for Bo. Second is he'll take 240 hits. Third, you got to drop 35 with 210 hits. That's a lot of pressure just by moving him around one spot.
Yeah,
it's just a ton, and you listen to him talk. It's a lot to overcome. We'll see.
Yeah, absolutely.
Fingers crossed he does it.
That was a great discussion with Dan O'Dowd. That is it for us. 3:07 first pitch. Jays, Yankees, Stroman, Gossman. We'll be back to do Blue Jays talk after the game on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. We'll be back here tomorrow from 2 to 4 Eastern on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and Sportsnet. Enjoy the baseball.